Hallo allemaal en welkom bij de middagsessie op OrangeCon van Angry Nerds. Bij mij aan tafel zit nog steeds Ad.
Hallo, ik ben er nog.
En Marja.
Hoi.
En we hebben inmiddels een volle tafel met gasten. Even kijken.
Yes, and we even have international guests. So this session will be in English.
Ooh.
All right. Shall we start with someone next to me?
Sure, of course. I'm Wouter Bokslag. Nice to be here. Thanks for the invitation. I'm one of the founding partners of Midnight Blue. I'm an embedded systems specialist, experience in OT. One of the authors of the Tetraburst research that people may be familiar with. And next to me is sitting...
Jos Wessels, also a founding partner at Midnight Blue. As Wouter said, we specialize in embedded systems, reverse engineering, radio security. At OrangeCon, we've been giving a training for the past 2 days on SDR security. And today we'll be giving a talk on the next iteration of our Tetra research, which covered the end-to-end encryption.
So we're starting direct with the first abbreviation, but SDR is a software-defined radio?
Yeah, it's software-defined radio. Yeah.
Because we thought we might theme the after-lunch session a bit, so we have even more radio here. Yeah. And I dare not pronounce your name.
Yes. So my name is very difficult to pronounce because I'm from Poland. So my name is Sławomir Jacek. Or in short, Sławek, but nobody is able to pronounce it, so you can call me whatever you want. So I'm a freelance researcher slash trainer, and I do a lot of Bluetooth, NFC, access control systems, smart locks. Recently, I've spent a few months coding my new tool that I just released here at the conference that allows you to control all the Bluetooth devices and to test for known vulnerabilities and to check for privacy issues that wearables can have and stuff like that.
So we have listening in on radios on one end and listening in on my headset at the other end of the table. So we're going to hack Bluetooth today and the Tetra. Although a Tetra radio is not something everybody has in their home, I think.
No, it's not. It's a part of a technology family geared towards professional use. So you find it in law enforcement and general emergency services. But also you find it in critical infrastructure, both by plant engineers and for data communication as well.
So basically that's the stuff that is really, really important, while all the Bluetooth problems are really just everywhere, because who doesn't have five different Bluetooth devices on their body or in their backpack at any given moment, at least here at the conference?
Yeah, well, of course, there are wearables, there are phones. I can connect to your phone and interrogate its model number or your iOS version and so on, and you don't even know that I've connected to it. Mm-hmm. I can connect to your wearables and check the serial numbers that you probably don't even know that they have and expose. But I can also control various devices using some scripts, because my tool is just based on the dynamic scripts that are made for specific devices. And in this way, I implemented, among others, a very quick check for whisper pair vulnerability that you may have heard, and also yet another vulnerability which is widespread but unknown. One of the sub OEMs that made most of the audio chips called Iroha, that you probably didn't hear about. They implemented their own protocol that allows you to directly access the internal memory of your headphones without any authentication. So you can use my tool to quickly check if you can read part of memory of your headphones with just one tap.
I remember we had a discussion between us when the first headphone hacks came out. Say like, oh, what do you have? Is it vulnerable? Is it vulnerable? There were quite a few high-profile brands ended up vulnerable.
All the major brands. But the problem is that the tools that were released by the researchers are not really user-friendly. So I suppose that most users were not able to check themselves whether their headphone is patched or not. So
I'm looking it up now. I think we did find a few.
The problem was that I have a Sony headset, but I have the older one.
Ah, the non-one.
And they were not included in the original tests from the article about WhisperPair, the one that we discussed in episode a long time ago. I haven't looked it up yet.
Oh boy.
Normally I would, but... I think they only went from the Mark 4 and up, and I have a Mark 3, and we just tested it in 5 seconds.
We tested another Sony, which was somewhere here, some attendee, and I was able to confirm it's vulnerable. So I tested it here at the airport in Amsterdam, and I had two phones because there were too many. And basically, like, about 90% of them were vulnerable. So I was able to get access to the whole internal memory, including the key. So if I have the key, I can spoof the headphone to the phone, for example. So it's kind of critical vulnerability that nobody is aware of.
And being able to hijack the audio connection to a phone is one thing. But if you were able to hijack my connection between the phone and my car, that one has access to all my contacts as well.
That's another story, because I would need to find the vulnerability in your car IVI or in your phone. But for that, I could... for example, use the latest attacks on repairing, which you probably didn't hear about, because this is also like hidden within some research scientists. So the new attack called Blair repairing allows you to enforce repairing. So I could actually pair as your headphone to your car and grab everything from it. So. I haven't implemented it yet in my tool, but I plan to do it.
Do you still use Bluetooth headsets and Bluetooth devices?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Well, it's a good thing. I mean, if you say no, I don't ever use them anymore, then we might reconsider how we...
Yeah, I use them in my trainings, for example, to show how vulnerable they are.
I'm just thinking the same question, but then for Tetra devices, it's a lot more difficult.
Yes, I want to dive into that as well. But no, the Bluetooth problem is that it's everywhere, I think. I have two phones. I have two Bluetooth headsets, and actually a third one in the bag. I have a smartwatch. We have the wonderful badge, which also does BLE, because it's...
Because I'm the Bluetooth guy who made it.
Yeah.
Because you also designed the badge, or
I designed the badges. I did the prototypes, and then I had to prepare my talk and so on. So I left it all to the team to finish. There are some small issues with the badges, including the battery life and stuff like that. But general idea, I think, works. So they talk to each other via Bluetooth and. Submit all of this to the cloud. So in the cloud, there is a confirmation that these two people met. So it's not like very easy to spoof it.
So the badge is fairly okay. It's just my answer.
Yeah, I mean, you can't really hack it on the Bluetooth layer. I mean, you could spoof it. Of course, the Bluetooth signal is not encrypted at all, but it doesn't give you anything if you spoof it, because it needs to be the encounter needs to be confirmed by the second batch. You would need to spoof the second batch as well. And most of all, you would need to have the keys to send it up to the cloud. So it's...
Like, and that bit of code is only open sourced after the event.
I think so. I don't know yet, to be honest. But
Curtis told us that the source code will be available after the event. So on the event, it's still part of the engagement.
Yeah, there are CTF flags in it. So
and some Easter eggs.
Apparently.
Well, he showed one. Not how to do it, but. Curtis showed there is an Easter egg in there somewhere. So if you haven't found that yet, go look.
I found something. You can have a nice OrangeCon logo scrolling through the screen.
Good. Well, that's one of them.
That's
yeah,
one
yeah,
of them.
I can yeah. imagine. Yeah.
We're not gonna spoil those. But okay, we have the Bluetooth omnipresent and apparently quite broken. How is that with the Tetra radios?
Yeah, I mean Tetra is one of the subjects radio wise that we focused on. Tetra is more widely used than people think. It's the dominant police radio standard, but as Wouter already mentioned, it is also used in critical infrastructure quite a lot. So there are large parts of the European power grid that do their telecontrol communications over Tetra networks. In various parts, I won't mention many of them, but parts of Eastern Europe, Southern Europe. And that's not just the power grid, that's also water, that's railway. So you see it's quite widely used, but not in consumer or enterprise environments so much.
And but then again, buses. It was not the only thing that you talked about the last couple of days, because you also had a workshop, and that was more focused on SDR in general and DSPs, I guess. So if you really don't know anything about that yet, could you give us a short introduction? What does it mean, and what did you teach?
It was a two-day training we delivered. We had a really nice group of 20 students that were really quite eager to learn. Very nice experience. And the goal was was twofold, I'd say. So what are software-defined radios? How can you use them? And how do RF signals look? So a software-defined radio allows you to capture pretty much any kind of radio signal and then process it using regular software on your computer instead of having to have a purpose-built chip or something for receiving a certain protocol. So it's much more versatile. And then we teach people like, hey, this is a garage door opener. What is actually transmitted? How can we get to the point that we see little sine waves fly through the air? Is this secure? How can we reason about these kinds of mechanisms? How can we find flaws in wireless connections that otherwise may feel like voodoo? So lift the veil, try to get people to understand these kinds of technologies. And from there on, the simple stuff, we move to more professional uses of RF technologies like Tetra and other professional
radio. Yeah, but it also
standards.
Included, for example, drones.
Yeah.
So there was an ask to specifically focus a little bit on drones. So some of the things we did were showing people how to recognize and intercept drone video signals,
cool.
The downlinks that are part of the drone, and show how that is relevant even in modern day military situations, where some of these signals are used that are fairly easy to intercept once you know what to look for and how to demodulate the signal and interpret it, and focus on different communication standards as well, because there's a lot of RF technology out there that most people don't know how it works, so it doesn't get included in most security assessments and audits.
Sure.
And that means there's a lot of technical debt there.
So I know you've worked a lot on Tetra, but do you have a favorite protocol? And you say, like, this is just technically really cool or just so broken, it's fun?
Yeah, I mean, I would say Tetra, and I think you agree, as a protocol is quite good. Not security-wise so much, but as a protocol, it's a decent protocol. I think many RF protocols, security-wise, are terribly broken. And we're currently looking in a few new ones that will be researched, that will be published sometime in the future. They're even worse than Tetra. We found some really, really bad stuff there. We've similarly been looking into satellite security as well, satellite downlinks. There's interesting stuff in there as well, but we can't share everything.
So
Tetra has a lot of caveats. It's quite tricky to get a network configuration that resembles something secure. Most people don't really have the knowledge to understand what they really need. And also, manufacturers tend to charge for every single extra feature. So a more secure setup will cost you more money. But in the sense of being super stable for mission-critical applications, Tetra is still one of the main technologies, I'd say.
Okay, so we have two Tetra fans, we have one Bluetooth fan, and I know we have two MeshCore fans, and I'm really curious about the not MeshCore people. What do you think of it? Because it's a real hype here.
What's the bandwidth you can achieve with MeshCore? Can you do voice over MeshCore?
No.
Yeah,
no, it's very low bandwidth.
Yeah.
It's at least here in Europe, either 443, 443 or 868. And the airtime is very restricted. So there's only a few bits basically going by. And we just had within the Dutch community of Meshcore a bit of a discussion on how to continue, as especially in the bigger cities, and especially around Utrecht, the mesh is saturated. There are too many repeaters, and there's just not enough airtime. So on May 9th, I think, there was a switch, and part of the community actually switched over to a different setting. The spread factor was changed, and also the forward error correction was reduced to free up about 3 times the bandwidth. But it's still very, very limited. And I do know, we haven't discussed this, and maybe I can discuss more this evening if I have read it more. Sasha, who was already also doing a talk here about something else, who we had on the show in episode 296, I think, actually has a fresh Meshcore exploit. Something to do with the name you can transmit over the LoRa network, the sender name that can actually be a cross-site scripting attack.
Yeah, it's a really neat attack.
Yeah, but I don't know the details yet.
I've seen some of them. It's basically a combination of Home Assistant and a Meshcore, because there's a plugin that they made for Meshcore to be integrated into Home Assistant, and you can set your Meshcore name to just be like an HTML tag that will just get included into the dashboard.
Yeah, and this also works for the analyzers that are.
Yep.
Now the real important question is, why did you ask about the bandwidth?
Well, because I wasn't 100% confident, but that was my thought indeed. Mm-hmm. Like these technologies, they cannot replace each other. Tetra has a very different audience, different requirements,
yep.
Yep. and different
Absolutely.
Features.
Absolutely.
These are great projects. I think it's really cool to see that there's a very active community behind it. That's something that misses in Tetra. Mm-hmm. Many of these critical technologies get developed and then kind of abandoned, and every 5 years manufacturers repackage the same shit and they sell it again with now a bigger color screen. While these kinds of enthusiast-driven technologies, they get scrutinized more, and I think that's very valuable.
There is an alternative for amateur radio for Tetra, which is DMR.
Yeah, well, actually, I have been building a Tetra base station stack from scratch in Rust. It's functional, it's working. I can spin up a base station right here. I have Tetra handsets as well, so if you want to play with it, we can do that later.
Oh, that sounds awesome.
Yes,
please.
It's called Blue Station. You can pull the code and build it.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. So there's options here.
I think we lost Wouter for the rest of the day.
Yeah, okay, goodbye. It was nice listening to Angry Nerds. And
just wanted to put it out there.
Yeah. No, that sounds amazing.
But I think that the point you made earlier about these vulnerabilities on the equipment side, there's a lot of that in Tetra as well. Yeah. There's protocol level vulnerabilities, cryptographic vulnerabilities, but once you have a good toolkit to interact with these devices, you figure out that most of the protocol stack implementations are riddled with bugs as well. Yeah. Some of which are exploitable over the air, others which are exploitable once you just plug the device into a laptop. Let's say the security posture of most of the devices in radio world, basebands, equipment, it's decades behind, essentially.
Yeah, any Android phone would do better than professional stuff.
Yeah, and we just heard that Android phones are still also not secure enough.
Well, it depends what your risk profile is. Is it a problem for you that someone knows your name, for example, because someone can connect to your phone and maybe you configure it a name in your phone, and someone could, interrogate your phone and see this model, a name. Well, probably it's not a risk, but maybe if you would observe it for a longer period of time and have a small sniffer hidden somewhere, then you could tell how often you visit specific place or whatever. I don't know.
I see Wouter's phone again and again and again.
Yeah, I was actually approached by a magician in Las Vegas, and he asked me, could you help me, because for my magic tricks, it's really big impact if I know a name of somebody on the audience.
Yeah.
So it could be used by magicians, for example, but maybe it could also be used by some malicious people. I don't know.
That's hilarious.
Those are also magicians, just not the right ones.
I know this from rental cars, by the way. Then, if for the company I work for, we sometimes have some extra rental cars if we have a project where a lot of people have to go there separately, and then it's always fun to check out the infotainment system and see which phones are still linked, and they have the iPhone from someone and another one, and Samsung from Pete or Case or whatever. Yeah.
My application scans for Teslas and tells the owner's name. So because owners set the name to the Tesla, it's usually something funny. But it's not a high risk. But I know that, you know.
I can imagine use cases for like more large scale tracking of people, like who enters and leaves certain stores.
Yeah,
things like that.
I mean, there are use cases like that in active use, right?
Yeah, definitely.
The idea of tracking busy areas, shopping malls. And then
in theory, phones are rotating the random MAC addresses, but I could maybe fingerprint specific phone model, and I could tell that this specific iPhone 17 enters this specific area at specific time. So maybe this joined together with some other metadata could be a problem.
Or the raw dump of the memory of the headset.
Oh yeah,
that is used to
dump of the memory
the
of the headset. I have everything.
I mean, that is a fingerprint.
Well,
that is more than just a fingerprint.
For majority of wearables, I have a fingerprint in as a serial number. So majority of your wristbands and smartwatches and so on, they have a widely publicly available serial number that you can just connect to it, and the owner even doesn't know that you are connected. It's just like,
and that is still using the full protocol, pretty much as intended, or maybe not as intended, but still using the regular tools from the protocol. So that's not even going to an SDR and looking at the raw data, or maybe just sending something that the protocol doesn't allow for. Yeah. Right? Or are you able to send anything using like just your phone with the Android app?
You are not able to send anything because your phone limits you to whatever the Bluetooth specification allows to do.
Yeah.
iPhone limits you even more. And that's where one part of my tool comes in, because I paired this phone with ESP32, including this badge. So you can actually have much more low-level features on the Bluetooth if you connect my application to this external ESP32 companion.
Okay.
So you have much more low-level access, you have remote relays, you have cloning, so you can, in two taps, you can clone this headphone into this and test this WhisperPair and Airoha legally on your clone device and not on somebody's headsets.
So that is already basically a software-defined radio.
I wouldn't call it software-defined radio. I would call it rather application-level Bluetooth stuff. So
you have an interface to tell the Bluetooth circuitry to behave in a certain way.
Yes, I can clone the exact behavior on the Bluetooth layer. You have an exact copy of real device. You can script the logic behind it, and this way you have a stable target for testing tools and understanding how it works and so on.
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah, as soon as you are able to fully go outside of what the specification dictates, of course you can open up a whole new attack surface.
So, for instance, for Tetra, we modified radio firmwares, and now we have our own stacks that allow us to inject messages at points that are really not supposed to clone identities of radios that are on the network, while completely skipping the whole network attach procedure. Mm-hmm. Normally a radio would need to attach to the network, then use an identity. Mm-hmm. It will just immediately start using an identity. It's interesting to see how systems react to these kinds of shenanigans.
Isn't that also that because Tetra is kind of an older protocol, that the assumption was at the time that they designed it that no one would have the financial resources, equipment, etc. to even break in on that level, that they just assumed like, oh, this is not possible. And now that we have SDRs and we have more advanced software, that it's possible to do this now?
Yeah, I mean, I think that assumption was definitely there. And it was also part of their threat model. But I don't think that assumption fully justifies a lot of the vulnerabilities that were in there. So it was part of the threat model, but you know, the backdoored algorithm that we found in TA1 with 32 bits of key space, we demonstrated that this was crackable already in the 90s on consumer hardware by buying an old Pentium 2 laptop, cracking it within, I think, 13 hours. So
on the Pentium 2,
So. These kind of systems, yes, they were designed prior to SDRs being commonly available. They were designed with different threat models, but they were also, for the time, not adequately outfitted to deal with the threats that were available then. And I think you see even newer radio systems, they still don't take into account how easy it is to mess with deeper layers of the protocol.
Yeah.
And this kind of ties in with what I mentioned before. Like, this technology stack was developed in the mid to late 90s, and then it just it stuck around, and there were revisions, but nothing major, especially with regards to security. They have new algorithms now, but they still did not add proper integrity checks on every single signaling message. That was what would be needed to fix this standard properly.
Yeah. And, is there some sort of backwards compatibility debt?
Well, they also have this hybrid mode to feature old and new radios on the same network, so they could draw a line and say new gen stuff will have authenticated signaling. Mm-hmm. And they didn't do that. I hope they would, because that would make Tetra much more resilient in practice.
And who is currently developing it? So we heard about a community, but quite a small community who's working on it, but who is actively working on it right now?
The standard is maintained by Etsy.
Yeah, maintained.
So they are in control of the standard and the standard's revisions. And of course, they don't do that completely alone. There is an association of parties with interests, and lots of manufacturers are represented as well.
And are you considering participating when you already have written
honestly,
some
I
stuff
don't
with
think
us?
We're invited.
Well, you mentioned satellite links earlier. I lit up because that's my job. And I know how bad some of that is, so I definitely recognize this 90s technology bolted onto.
Yeah.
Like
yeah,
well, Bolton and another thing. So
I don't think we had it in the podcast, but I think somewhere end of last year there was this group of researchers who talked about their "Don't Look Up" thing, and that was just put up an antenna, just a regular antenna you could buy for watching TV, point it up and grab all the free signals from the satellites above. And there was actually military, unencrypted military information in there.
Still is.
Because who would be able to reach the skies? Well, we all do.
Yep. Now
$100 or euros or.
I think it's a lot of the people that are looking at that stuff and have been looking at that stuff for a long time don't talk about it.
Yeah.
And many of the people who would talk about it either haven't had the capabilities or haven't had the skills or haven't had the time in many cases, because you also need to justify the time for a project and being able to talk about that publicly. But I think that is changing a little bit. But I don't see the awareness on part of the asset owners changing. I mean, if you talk to a lot of people in critical infrastructure who are using satellite technology, it's a complete black box to them. They assume it'll be okay, it'll be encrypted in some form, or they'll just trust the vendor, well, we have an encryption layer on top of the DVBS or whatever, and it'll be fine. And they have no idea how it works. And I think there's a lot of technical depth in there.
Which also means, because you already said that a little bit earlier, we have to invite you maybe in half a year or next year again, and maybe you can tell us a bit more then.
Yeah, we don't have timelines on the new research, because there's you always have to figure out where to fit it into the rest of your schedule. But I think somewhere next year we'll have some new stuff to talk about.
And where will Bluetooth be in half a year or a year from now?
Oh, I don't know.
just as vulnerable, or is there anything actually being done because of all this research, like WhisperPair and your research? And
I hope to move a little bit forward in terms of the users actually pushing for the security, because currently nobody cares. So why would a smart lock vendor, because I have a smart lock which is, according to the vendor, is number one selling on Amazon, and it has perfect security. It has perfect security, but it has been broken by three different teams in various ways, and currently stars a free course on reverse engineering Android Bluetooth to hack this smart lock. It's perfectly fine for trainings, but I wouldn't use it in practice. It has 5 stars on Amazon, and everybody buys it, so why would they care? Why would they need to patch it? So I can unlock all the locks, because you can just ask nicely the server, give me the pin to this lock based on the MAC address, and they didn't patch it for 3 years. And nobody cares.
So
maybe if users know about it and they start pushing the vendors to actually implement the security, maybe something will change.
Yeah.
You are working specifically on Bluetooth security, but if we go back 2 steps, there are Bluetooth is actively developed still. There are different versions, and not all versions work with all kind of hardware that we already have. Could you share a bit just more context on the currently most used Bluetooth versions and their differences between the
worlds? Well, this is one of the most confusing parts in Bluetooth, because on your box, the latest headphones that you buy, it says that it has Bluetooth 5.3. In practice, it uses Bluetooth 2 to transmit audio, because Bluetooth SIG allows you to put a label Bluetooth 5.3 without actually supporting Bluetooth 5.3, but maybe a small subset of it. So it is one of the most confusing parts. And in terms of the development of Bluetooth, for example, Bluetooth LE Audio, which is the next big thing in terms of headsets, it came out in 2019, I think. And we still don't really have a lot of headsets that support it. So most of them just transmit audio the old way using Bluetooth Classic. So it takes like about maybe 10 years for this technology to set. It's not moving very quickly, and we have a lot of debt and old chips that will never be updated. So
so it's going to be a problem for quite a while.
Yes, it will be.
And there is not one simple single solution, so we're just screwed. And we do need to push for safer equipment as a consumer. But I don't know, who should we address this to?
So for a couple of things, we have handy apps like the app to check for trackers if you are being tracked, or what tech your mobile uses. Is there an app for Bluetooth so you could check what kind of versions your device is using?
The version
or
is
does
not
it even help?
The version is not the most important thing. The more important thing is that if your device is vulnerable to some known attacks, and that's where I would like to fill the gap with my application. So that it is something that you can download. Currently it's on Android, but it will be released for iOS as well. And even if your iOS limits you in terms of Bluetooth, if you connect to this ESP32, you will have these low-level features as well. So it will give you possibility to just, I don't know, scan for nearby devices, check your own exposure to...
Maybe you can hold it next to the camera so people can see your app.
Yeah.
You want to share?
I don't know. We have an iPhone here. I can check the iOS model of it with just a single tap, and we know that there is iPhone 12 somewhere nearby. Well, maybe this is not a problem, but we can also check these JBL headphones, whether they are vulnerable to WhisperPair, for example. I don't know whose JBL headphones are there, but I have a button to check for WhisperPair. In this specific headphones, I didn't implement it because I need to get the key from the cloud server for this specific model. But if it was Sony headset, I could use it check and download this internal memory. We did it just before, but this Sony headset, I think.
And if someone wants to play with this, where can they get this this app now?
This is called Blesploit, BLESP, BLESPLO.IT. So you can find Blesploit on Play Store, or go to my website blesplo.it. Sorry, Blesploit. Bluetooth ESP. Yeah. So
sense some slight regrets over the name.
it seemed fun because it was like BLE and ESP and exploit. So I thought Blesploit would be nice, but it's difficult to pronounce. Yes, I'm sorry.
BLE exploit with a dot in the middle.
Yeah, maybe.
Because it's .IT. Yes. Get it on Google Play. Well, it's something I want to play with a bit.
Yep.
Yep. Maybe not here, maybe at home. Because I do have a electric car and a charger with Bluetooth connectivity, and I'm starting to worry now. And I'm afraid that at least one of my solar inverters also is capable of doing Bluetooth.
Yeah, my solar inverter also, and the battery can do Bluetooth, and unfortunately I cannot turn it off. And this is just one, maybe two prompts away from, like, you pull the application from the, I don't know, APK Pure or whatever, you just download the application, decompile it, and ask nicely an agent, tell me how this Bluetooth works, how this protocol works for this application. So you have, like, 20 seconds later, outline the whole protocol. You don't need to have any technical knowledge. And then you, the next query is, write me a plugin for my application that will control this device. And you have it. So it's like, it doesn't require any technical knowledge to actually exploit it. If there is some problem with authentication, or maybe no authentication at all, which is very often in such devices, anybody with such app could just use this active script to control your and shut down your power or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, that's an issue. There is a pin on there.
Yeah, maybe we could brute force the pin. I don't know.
Well, only 10,000 options, so probably.
Well, regarding the pin, I don't know if you've heard about it, but in the States, there are the crosswalk push buttons. Mm-hmm. So if you press the button, it says walk.
Yeah.
So they have been hacked to say something else.
Yeah.
Mark Zuckerberg about end of the world or something like that.
Yeah, and Elon.
Yeah, Elon, yeah. The whole hack was about download the application, follow the manual to enter 1234 PIN, and press the button to upload your own voice. So this was the whole hack. You just needed to know about the application.
Yeah.
So did they fix it? They probably did change the pin, so you maybe just need a small script that would bypass this somehow.
Yeah, and if I recall correctly, the hack wasn't new because it was there before, so they also didn't fix it before.
Yeah, well, my app will just show you that here nearby is an interesting target that you may press a button and take it over. Like, so.
In general, I think this is the really cool thing about the whole radio part, because you can't see it. We use it everywhere. We don't even know where we use it. Mm-hmm. And there's actually a lot behind it. So
The more I think about it, the more Bluetooth devices I think of, like, oh wait, I also have like the EV charger and the inverter, and oh wait, I do have a tracker in my bag as well. It's also Bluetooth. It's not it's the Samsung Galaxy Smart Tag thing.
I have another terrible another terrible application there is that a lot of Wi-Fi access points have now started to do provisioning over Bluetooth.
Oh.
So
we had the WEP pin debacle, where you have an 8-digit pin, but you would...
WPS
stuff. The WPS. But you could ask it after the first 4 if those were correct. And now they are using Bluetooth for provisioning. Okay, that can only go wrong.
Yeah, well, Bluetooth is used extensively for Wi-Fi provisioning, and most devices do it wrong. For example, there were humanoid robots that were hacked by Bluetooth because the Bluetooth was used for Wi-Fi provisioning, mm-hmm. and there were 2 parameters: Wi-Fi SSID and password. And if you said semicolon reboot,
oh,
yeah.
Oh wow,
yeah. Well, these were like $40,000 humanoid robots. Yeah, so.
Wow, you don't even need an SDR for that.
Yeah, this is the level of security, even with the expensive hardware.
Just in 2024, research was released that a whole series of predominantly Japanese cars were vulnerable for the rollback vulnerability, which means that if you have a car key with a button to unlock your doors, it should send a counter, and that counter increments each time, right?
So and the rolling code.
The rolling code stuff, an old counter will not be accepted. Well, these cars, if you just send 5 consecutive old key presses, it will synchronize backwards.
Yeah, yeah.
So you have 1 recording of 5 presses, for instance, by temporarily jamming the receiver of the car and having the owner being quite annoyed that his car doesn't open. And at any point in the future, you can just open the car. That's recent research. I would hope we are kind of past these kinds of vulnerabilities, but clearly we are not.
We're almost never past those kind of vulnerabilities. Yeah, they keep coming back and back and back.
Yeah, I think there's even an example, a live example here at OrangeCon, because downstairs there's a little village, I think it's WarpNet, who also got a couple of car hacking and devices there, so maybe later on we can still check them out.
Yeah, we actually had this exact demo in our training as well. I have a body control module from OrangeCon.
Because that's the point. There's good news here and there's bad news. The good news is in like half an hour, people can still listen to your talk on Tetra.
Yes.
And more good news is that even if you're not there in half an hour, you can watch it back, and you can also watch back the talk on Bluetooth.
Yep.
But there's also bad news, and the bad news is that your 2 days training. So on Bluetooth, you had a 2 days training, and there's another 2 days training.
I had 3 days training on Bluetooth.
I'm sorry.
I still didn't cover it.
And you had a 2 days training on the SDRs, and people can't watch that back. Is there another chance how they can get your wisdom?
Yes, we're doing the training a couple of times this year. We'll be giving it back-to-back 2 times at Black Hat USA, and then we'll be delivering it at DEF CON in USA. And we also have an edition at Brucon, which is a little bit closer to home, and we'll be delivering it at Black Hat Europe at the end of this year in December.
Oh, so we will meet both in Black Hat US and Black Hat Europe.
Oh, no.
I do lots of private trainings because I believe this is the most impactful and the best way to actually teach your team exactly what what it needs. So we take the exact technologies and stacks and products that you are working on. So this is basically my core business is providing private trainings, and this actually finances my research and developing such tools.
So yeah. after all the conferences this year, you three working together.
I don't know, we've just met, but yes. You seem like interesting people. I was really curious about your talk, so yes.
yeah, always open to collaborate on interesting research subjects.
Our main business is in critical infrastructure. The RF stuff is a significant part of that, but like in OT you encounter all kinds of wires crap as well. So
yeah, I wouldn't mind discussing that further at a different moment.
Right, always.
Because I think in a couple of minutes it'll be break time, and then this whole area next to us will be very busy and very loud.
Let's round it up then, so yep. You can still prepare a little bit more.
Right.
Last good. Couple of minutes before your presentation. Thanks a lot for being here.
Thanks for having me.
It's really nice to have the three of you here, especially yep. The combination of the different kinds of radio.
And if you're ever in the area on a Thursday evening, we do have our regular podcasts. Always welcome to join.
Cool. Thank you. Yeah, that was it for this session. See you later.